Okay, this is Bob Stone for the Bureau of Florida Folklife Programs. I'm at the residence of Charlie Grote in Crystal Beach, Florida, documenting the Folk Arts Apprenticeship, where Cheryl Bellinger is studying corded zither. It's June 21st, 1991.
Okay, because of the nature of the corded zither, the fact that we must use chord bars most of the time to gain the while gaining the melody notes that we want. One of the great challenges of this instrument, and the thing that separates people who can really play it from people who are at the chord stage on it, is learning which chord bars to press to get which melody notes in which keys. And that's not a simple thing, and that's what we've been working on, haven't we?
Yes.
So, we've been working with a tune called Listen to the Mockingbird. In order to do this, and what Cheryl's been doing is we've been writing the tunes out, and then writing the background chords out, and then she's been working on deciding which chord bars to press to get the melody notes. This is the big challenge of this instrument. There's a body of knowledge related to that she's gaining, rules of thumb to be learned and when they're to be broken, and doing a pretty good job on it. So right now, why don't we try a little snatch of Listen to the Mockingbird and just see how that's going.
Okay.
Two, three, four, one.
I'm having trouble getting the tune in my brain. Okay. See, in my head, I've always thought of this part, and I was never familiar with the other, okay. So I'm just having trouble getting on board. Okay. Two, three, four, one.
Out these notes last week, and as you out there in the great ozone listening to the tape have heard, she's worked the thing out pretty well on that. And last week I asked her to work on another tune. Cheryl works with her husband Ray in a duo, and so I thought it would be a good idea to work on tunes that they're working on, so that when we finish working on it, she can add the tunes to what she's doing with her husband. Okay, now this one we've got the backup worked out. Let me make sure the backup is right.
I have sailed across the water, saw the ocean deep and blue, felt the magic of the dawn and thrilled the sunset's golden hue. I have soared, right there should be another C. Soared.
Actually, it's only a notation thing.
Right, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah,
I got a pencil right.
Yeah, okay.
Do this according to Hoyle. Here.
Yeah. Right there.
Right here.
Yeah. I like to put them in every single measure.
Every measure? Okay, well, I didn't remember. So
okay, I'm going to keep checking.
Saw the valleys green and white, Elizabeth, more like heaven by your side. It's a little more like heaven where you are. I have sought for happiness both near and far, but my search for love is through the day that I met you.
okay, it's right. Good. Except that you need another measure there. There should be 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, see, to hook onto that.
1, 2, 3, 4.
So that there should be a bar line there and then a half note right
there. Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay. Right. There. Good. Now, why don't you start through this on the melody notes that you figured out.
Okay.
And we'll see how you're doing. It looks pretty good.
Now, see, the reason I put this one in the parentheses there is...
Yeah, well, that's... The question... It comes down to the lesser of two evils in that case, and there are a few cases like that where you'll have something where there's absolutely no chord that gives you exactly what you want. And the thing to do is not only pick the lesser of all of the evils, so to speak, but make a very narrow pinch on that chord
without using any chord bar.
So that use the best chord bar you can find, and then just use a very narrow pinch so you're not clipping a lot of these strings that are bent.
Okay. And
I guess all music is sort of a process of illusion.
One of the questions that I had when I was working this out is that because the melody line jumps up and down a lot into different chords,
it sure does.
Bars, do you absolutely change chord bars every single time in order to accent those notes?
Yep.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
you don't get too lazy, huh? Okay.
Now, the open playing technique that we talked about, where you don't use a chord bar, is the thing to do when you absolutely can't, when there just isn't time. You know, then you've got to do that. But normally you wouldn't.
Yeah, it's not that there isn't time.
No, not with this tune. So let's take it slow, but let's try to take it through. And at least let's go through the end of the verse. Let's go that far,
okay,
if we can. Now keep this in mind too, where your notes are and so forth. Make a strum so you know right where you're going to start. There, now see? That little bit of difference made the difference between that C and not having it. And that's the thing. So let's try it. And I'll try to put a little rhythm behind. Let's go real slow because you're going to need to go slow. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2. Okay.
Oh, see?
Okay, no, that's not bad.
This is where I goofed up.
Yeah. Let's take it right from there.
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2. Keep your wrist up.
It's been feeling looser anyway.
Mm-hmm.
On the Mockingbird
you're
thing.
You're doing better on it. It just takes time. A lot can be accomplished while sitting on a bar stool. Give a listen here. Mm-hmm. Now, the only difference there is in wrist motion and finger motion. I wasn't doing anything different than what you were doing at all.
Right.
So try to keep it loose. I may be taking a little bit less of a chunk when I pinch than you're taking. You notice how I'm doing a little crossover there? You can do that. And I was also occasionally when I'm doing a fast switch, I'm doing a one. What?
Right. I'm going to have to practice that.
See, what it does is, the other way is so much more choppy.
Yes, I know it. I know.
Mostly from the wrist. There, now there. Now do.
Okay. I have trouble making my two hands work together.
Now that's the bones of it. Keep coming. Now do it again. Well, oh, wait. Get a clean start. Okay. Okay, that's the bones of the idea. Smooth them out.
Okay.
Anywhere where you have this little figure with the... with the eighth notes,
it's
a good candidate for that. You want to smooth that thing out so it flows along. Ideally, you want to have your harp a little better tuned than this one. There it is. I'll start the timing, and then you just pick up wherever you want to.
All right.
Loosen your arm up. I can see your muscles are just standing out because you're tense.
My whole body. Just my arm.
Here, let me start the timing again. Tell you what, a lot of this stuff, if you exaggerate it, then you'll be about right. At first, when you start to do something, you always feel tight, you know, and it feels like you're doing a big thing and you're not.
I know it.
You're not doing enough wrist. So exaggerate it like mad, you know. Make it seem like it's just entirely exaggerated, and I'll bet it won't be. Here we go. Let's go on. but at first when you were really exaggerating it, it was just right.
Yeah.
But you see that it does work.
Get the idea.
And the old man does know what he's talking about.
Contrary to what the local drunks think. Now, let me try to play harp with you and see what we can do about getting it just right. As far as the melody notes go, you've got the right notes, and that's the important thing.
Good.
Yeah, these small techniques are.
Yeah, but they make such a huge difference because I know that my sound is choppy.
There's a person I won't mention right now, who's a very famous player, who to my mind is extremely choppy and not something I like to listen to. It's something that you say, gee, that's really well done. But it's not really very musical, you know. Mm-hmm. Let me have a C chord there. You got a crank there anymore?
No, just my little one.
Okay.
Got a note here that's
there's just quite a difference, you know, between the A models and the B models.
What is design-wise, what is it?
Well, they've just gone for a box that gives a much sweeter tone, you know. This has got a much jangly sound.
You know what they did?
Big,
physically?
Heavier bracing inside.
It's way
mostly
heavier.
And different
it's
materials.
Very much heavier.
Uh-huh. Different materials. This has a laminated back. This has a solid back. And it's much bouncier sound.
Do they use spruce for the top?
On the better models, yeah. Yeah, on the better models.
The reason I say that we don't, it doesn't create the kind of sound for our vocals is because mostly we sing easy going, mm-hmm. gentle tunes, although when we sing something really upbeat like we've been doing I'll Fly Away and that harp is just fabulous. It's
this is
perfect.
A maple instrument.
Uh-huh. And what's that?
And so that's probably a spruce top instrument.
Oh, so that has a maple top?
Yeah, this is a maple throughout. Back in the old days, that's the way they made them. Yeah.
Top guitar.
Yeah. Okay, let's try to sing again.
Now, you want me to just play backup?
No, I'll do the back. Well, why don't we do two times through the chorus? You're not ready to do the verse yet. I mean, the chorus yet. But two times through the verse.
Okay.
And I'll do the first one. Ready? One, two, three. Fills in the whole works, and that's what you have to do when you do your backup. Can't forget any of that stuff. Okay, one, two, three.
This morning, there's something wrong with this auto harp. It around the pins, they all my strings break right around the pins. I could break one every 2 weeks or so. For a while there, I was.
Wow.
It's brand new. It's really hadn't been used that much, and I'm not all that strong. Are we taping right now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So this will be under the double eagle.
Thank you.
my quantity of mistakes? Oh, gosh.
Dinner. Ready?
Just up and gone the very moment that you come in view, and with you in my arms I could dance all night long, and I could waltz across Texas with you. Oh, waltz across Texas with you in my arms. I could waltz across Texas with you. Like the story of Indy, I'm lost. And I can waltz across Texas.
Not as easy as you might think without picks. Cheryl. You're going to count me in, remember?
I was trying to mirror myself, but you're right. I commit that crime. Okay.
Okay, go for it.
One, two, three.
Not bad. Another one you couldn't have ever. Have you done Keep on the Sunny Side yet?
No, I haven't. Another thing that recently I've been doing, which is a thing that, of course, come out of the apprenticeship, is my ability to pick out melody on this song. Simple Gifts is the name that we call ourselves, Ray and I. And so I've learned, we've got a little version of that. We used to do a real simple guitar and Otto Hart backup with vocal that we did a lot of times when we performed. And now we're doing it with a hammer dulcimer and the auto harp, but it's just an instrumental, a brief introductory thing, and I'm just playing the first part of it, which leads into the hammer dulcimer playing the melody with me backing them up. But it was in no time at all that I could play this. Of course, it's a familiar tune for me too.
The nice part of this is that you figured this out using the stuff that
that's
you've
right
learned.
That's right. And that makes sense.
I've heard her play something that she figured out using the things that I taught her, but away from me. So it really works. Okay. What's left?
Well, Keep on the Sunny Side.
Okay. Now this is another one where the auto harp plays a part in a tune that has a vocal aspect. So, well, what I'll do is I'll just play a verse and then I'll hand it off to you. This is a neat old tune. Maybe Al Carter did this on the harp. Ready?
Keep on the sunny side.
still singing, right?
Right.
All right, here we go.
Not
funny in the amusing sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're almost done. There's about another month to go yet, still really over a month to go. What do you folks plan on covering for the last month?
I'm teaching Cheryl how to find notes that she wants to find. You know, there's an old saying that if you give somebody fish, you fed him, but if you give him or her the method of fishing, then they have food for their lives. And so what I'm trying to do is teach her how to look at songs, to hear songs and look at songs in books and so forth, and find out how to play those songs on the instrument. And that's the most challenging thing to learn about this instrument, because it's unlike an instrument that has frets. There's just one note per string here,
mm-hmm.
and there's also a constraint that almost all of the time you must have a chord bar pressed down while playing. So you've got those two things to fight at the same time as you need to get the different melody notes. And so it's tricky, and that's what the rest of it is going to be consisting of, is learning how to do that.
Can you explain to a guy like me who doesn't play the auto harp, How do you approach that?
Well, Cheryl, do you have your chart there? No, you probably have it. Okay, now, how to explain this so that a rolling tape can hear it, I'm not sure.
Uh-huh.
But I'm sure you're familiar with intervals.
Uh-huh.
And that the scale is composed of intervals that we name 1 through 8. And there is a system within each chord for getting each one of those melody notes with a certain chord bar. And say I were in the key, if I were in the key of C, then my C chord bar would be my one chord, my F chord bar would be my four chord, and my G chord bar would be my five chord, and so on and so forth. And within the notes that are in those chord bars are also found the melody notes. Mm-hmm. And what you have to do is learn how to pick the right bar to start with, where to find the melody note in the matrix of the strings, and when it's better to use one chord bar over another one. We just discussed a little bit ago, we had a situation where we needed an F note in the key of C. Well, first you think about which of the chord bars will present you with an F, and obviously two of the choices are F and G7, because the seventh of G is F, and the tonic of F is F. Mm-hmm. So then you ask yourself, what is the backup doing at that point? And at that point in the song, the backup was playing a C chord. So if your choices are F or G7, then you need to see which one of those two chord bars presents the least notes that will conflict with the C chord that's going on in the background. And then, having determined that, and in that case we decided it was G7, then you have to decide exactly what kind of a pinch to use on the harp to avoid the notes that will jangle. The B, for example, which would jangle real badly with
that. Right. So in that case, you'd pick like the G and the F.
That's right.
Probably.
That's right. Yeah. Avoiding those other two notes, because the other two notes hurt. And what Cheryl has to learn is A, how to do it, and then B, she has to get this thing that you're looking at and the tape is not looking at in mind. This has to be in mind, not on paper. Right now, she's at that stage of look it up and find out what makes it work. We got to get to the point where we are, you know, looking and doing right now. You know, it's right in your mind. And this same knowledge, plus the knowledge of a little music theory that we're doing, is what's going to help her be able to read tunes out of books, say she has a fiddle book. Uh-huh. Well, how does she know? She may be able to sit at the piano, if Cheryl plays piano, and play that fiddle tune in a minute. Well, she has to have the same ability to convert that to the auto harp, and this is what we're...
How would you go about it if you were doing it by ear? Say it was a tune that wasn't written down.
Well, if I were doing that, I'm a pretty methodical person. I guess that's reflected in my work in computers and so forth. So there are people who would tell you hunt and peck. And I'm not one of those people. What I would do is I would learn what key I was in, you know, and then I would take a pencil, and as I listened to that tune, I'd mark intervals down. That's a one, that's a four, that's a five.
Do you mean the chord changes?
No. No, melodic intervals.
The melody.
You don't really need the chords. You know, because the melodic... Well, you need them if you're going to play with someone else, that's for sure. Yeah. But I probably would put the chords down. I'd make a chart showing all the majors and the chords in the majors, and then I'd go through and get the melody notes figured out. And from there on, I'd proceed the same way as I was saying. And it sounds, I know you got a big frown on your face.
No.
It's really not as daunting as it sounds. It's easier to do than you think once you get started at it. I know that I tell people that, and I had one lady that quit right then, you know. She never came back for a second lesson when she found out that was going to be necessary, but she's getting it.
Were you asking more or less, say, in the context of a pick-in where people were playing tunes and you wanted to be able to play a tune that you were just hearing at that time and maybe weren't in a situation of writing it down? Or?
Well, and again,
that's
been
a concern of mine.
Well, that's where you just learn to think of these things.
Yes, and it's practice. Yeah. Sort of practice makes
practice
perfect.
Makes perfect. This stuff is in my mind to the point where I can sit down and do that pretty quickly.
Well, see, I'm already finding that the little bit that I've worked with it has allowed me to develop some of that almost naturally. I mean, mm-hmm. I surprise myself sometimes that I know where to go, whereas before I would have said, gosh, there's no way.
The thing about this thing is, Bob, that people look at this and they say, well,
two things. This is limited in certain ways, this instrument is, and in other ways it's very difficult, so it daunts them. But the thing is, you can always work right up to the absolute limit, you know, with it. And I found out that the instrument has no practical limits if you're willing to have a couple instruments, for one thing. Mm-hmm. One of these animals is really not enough, because you need too many different chords to cover all the keys. So just about every player has a few. Mm-hmm. And for example, if I have another one in the back that's a 12-bar set up just like this, but it's all set up a pitch higher. What sounds a C chord on this harp sounds a D on that harp. Mm-hmm. And with that allows me several keys that I don't have, just don't practically have on this one. The other solution is to get one with multitudes of chord bars, like 21, 22 bars. Uh-huh.
And these are how many, 12?
These are 12. Uh-huh. And this is your old traditional setup. Hers has 15. That's still admissible. But every chord bar that you add takes away playing space. And you need this crucial space right here at the very top of the chord bar. Uh-huh. Then you've got to have that space if you're going to play these notes. If you start crowding up into this point, you can see where this once
was.
You
can't play the short strings.
Yeah, then you can't. Mm-hmm. You don't have your high pitches at all.
Mm-hmm. So then the instruments with the more chord bars has to be bigger instruments.
Well, they aren't, though. They just cover up the strings. Yeah, some people make them, build them.
Or skinnier chord bars.
Now, Mark Faculty is working on a skinnier chord bar setup. As a matter of fact, I have a prototype of that in the other room. Mm-hmm. But
he put 15.
Then you're talking about finger space too, you know, and how your fingers will work with the spaces.
Mm-hmm. And I would assume that some of the newer players that are doing experimental things, they swap their chord bars and do all sorts of hot rod and stuff. That's, is that what they're up to?
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. I think it's gone too... Well, let's not say that, but let's just say that I'm in favor of doing the most that you can do with the instrument that you have. And when you've gotten everything out of it, then start changing it. I'm not in favor of changing the instrument until you're sure you're not just taking an easy way out. You know, there's lots of things you can do with this instrument that folks don't think you can do unless you get another one. So that's my position on that, which some don't agree with. I'm a traditionalist, let's face it, you know.
Well, that's the old, you know, traditional way.
Yeah, and that's what we've learned here. What I've been teaching her, all these techniques that I've been teaching her, most of these techniques, I would say, a healthy 75% of them are not documented anywhere, and if I can ever get the space in my life, I'm going to write that book that contains those things. But you know how that goes too.
Yeah.
the books that are out are just a lot of them are really pathetic.
Yeah.
I've gained this stuff just from watching and listening and playing with people all over the place. And it really, it's a shame and a pity it's not written down, but, you know.
Well, also, I would think there'd be a problem in communicating it by the written word.
Well, it would have to be a pretty ambitious undertaking to get much of it together. This wrist thing that you keep hearing me talking to her about, how would you in the world would you go about writing that down, you know?
Like fiddle wrist, right?
I learned to do that just from watching. There was one fellow or two that really did it just the way I wanted to hear it, and I just watched them until I saw what they were doing. Bill Clifton was one of them, a rather famous name.
So how do you feel about all this, Cheryl? How's it been for you?
Well, it's been a lot of work.
Yeah. Was it good for you?
But
it was good for me.
It was great. I'm actually now starting to see that maybe I'll be able to do some of these unbelievable things that he said I'd be able to do it sometime.
I'd be able to
do it.
At first it looks real difficult, you know, but then you start to penetrate it and it's not so difficult.
Yeah. So the wrist business and other things that sound simple, like tapping your foot to maintain a constant tempo, I'm starting to do that without forcing myself to. Mm-hmm. And before, I would never do it, never, unless I said, you must do it, and I, you know, drilled my attention on doing it. Now I find that I'm doing it when I don't even think about it. So that's becoming, it's the thing of the what you need to do becoming natural, you know.
Yeah. Right. Let's just talk about it. It sounds pretty mundane or whatever, but how about the foot tapping? What do you have to say about it?
Well,
what are you trying to teach or convey to Cheryl?
That's a part of my religion. I think it's very important because when we're playing in these situations, we're playing a type of music that usually doesn't include a dedicated rhythm keeper. A lot of other kinds of music include dedicated people like drummers who are their entire job in making the music is rhythmic. Bluegrass has rhythm guitar players always, and that's their entire job. And we don't have that in some of the types of music we're playing, or maybe we do have the guitar. So we need something that's outside of our immediate thoughts and outside of our immediate work with our hands and our voices in making the music that is keeping the rhythm. And if you develop a firmly ingrained habit of keeping time with your foot, then you've got something there that's completely outside of the immediate.
Do you tap out like in 4/4 time? Do you like to tap out all four beats or the first and third?
I usually tap twos, yeah, the first and third.
That seems pretty common.
Yeah, because that I think if you're
relaxing too, I can get.
I think that's it gives you a little more psychological space. It just loosens the thing up a little bit if you're counting in twos.
So that was interesting that Cheryl said that about it. It's more relaxing.
Mm. Well, I noticed myself. I have a tendency if I'm a little tense on a piece that I'm going every single beat with my foot, and my whole body is like, you know, tensing up and pushing.
I've even known people that tap on eighths. They'll tap eight beats to a major. eight taps to a major. That'd keep you busy. But it's very important. I think it's just very important because it's a bodily motion. You're moving a big muscle. You know, a big part of your body is keeping that time while the rest of you is busy with all the other stuff.
What do you, Cheryl? What do you feel like are some of the most important elements of playing this thing that you've picked up? You know, the things that you really have to do right for it to sound good.
Well, first of all, of course, the two basic techniques of playing it, which are playing the melody and playing backup, which they're very different, and just getting those defined and learning some techniques for those. And then gleaning from Charlie his ability to be a one-man band, so to speak. You know, there's so much that he does with one person playing the instrument and, say, just playing the melody. But if you play the melody along with some frills, as he terms it, in between that, it just fills it up, and it sounds wonderful, just one person playing without anybody else. And so I'm just always carefully observing him. He'll say to me, "But you look so serious." I say, "But I am serious." Trying to capture this.
It's got to be fun, too, though.
That's right. We have a lot of fun. So, and then being able to take these things and just use them right away, because my husband and I are constantly working on new music beside what we have here, and it just all fits together so nicely.
So you're already using it elsewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Great. Yeah.
And I usually bring it up either in private or sometimes in performance with people, the experience to share that with them.